Are you going to bring the mustache back? I mean, for real. I mean, you shouldn't be ashamed of that mustache.
Yes, he should.
No, the mustache is never coming back. Those days are gone, my friend.
I was embarrassed to ride with him.
This is Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon, bringing to you the best in news, reviews, and interviews with people making the bourbon whiskey industry happen, and I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Coleman. Every brand, they find their own path. Some will talk about how they source grains right there from their own farm. Some will rely on a historical figure from decades ago. But for Rabbit Hole, they're positioning themselves as a modern brand. And Kaveh Zamanian, he makes his return to the show to talk about how the brand has changed in the past few years since we had him on last. We discuss their brand and how the liquid has evolved, how they're reaching into new demographics that have been left untapped, and his take on a new series of high-end innovations and collaborations, plus a favorite pastime of ours, talking about dusty hunting. With that, enjoy this week's episode. Now here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. This week's idea comes from Patreon member Jesse Boggs, who writes me on fredminnick.com. What's it like being Fred Minnick? Well, Jesse, since I've never been another human, at least that I know of, I guess it's just like being me. But so I guess I'll answer it from a little bit of like how I got where I am. I basically, when I came home from Iraq, I was in therapy, close to being homeless, and close to, you know, even worse, going to jail or being dead. And I was really trying to get myself in a better situation, and I focused on my health, my mental health. And one of the processes that I learned was mindfulness, and aromatherapy, and I would use those as I was a budding kind of freelance writer covering wine and covering spirits. And I learned through taste mindfulness, I basically learned how to taste spirits. And I would train with the master sommeliers and master distillers. But, you know, that's just the early part. I would send countless pitches to people to write about bourbon, and I would get rejected. My book, Whiskey Women, had, I think we had 800 to 1,000 rejections on the book, Whiskey Women, and only one publisher said yes to it. My books, Bourbon and Bourbon Curious, you know, they had their fair share of negative reviews. And so I think, I guess I'm kind of painting a picture here of like all the things that I get to do. I look at like the challenges that I overcome to get there. And I always think about the editors who rejected me. And I think about my high school English teacher who told me I should become a welder instead of a writer. And so those are the things that I think about. So that's what motivates me. What motivates me is that kind of like sportsman mentality of like someone said you couldn't do it. That's what motivates me. And everything that I have built, everything that I do is in large part because of people saying I couldn't do it. And the aspect of where I am now, which I'm not really writing as much as I used to. Obviously, I'm not writing as much as I used to. I do more podcasting and YouTubing. But where I'm at now, I'm at a different stage in my career, and I'm about education. I'm about teaching people. I'm in the middle of shooting a TV pilot. I get booked all over the country for private events to do tasting. Sometimes it's with a celebrity at a private event. Sometimes it's by myself. But in all instances, I get to teach people how to taste and teach them about bourbon, and I feel like I'm giving someone a light bulb moment of this beautiful industry that we have. Yeah, sure. I get sent samples like the Heaven Hill 17-year-old, and I'll get the Buffalo Trace Antique collection of samples. But you know what? I'll taste those, and I don't get excited about that stuff. I get excited about the people, even the people who hate me. I love being in a room with someone who, and there's plenty of people who hate me because I've said one thing about a bourbon and they couldn't find it, or whatever. You know, by the way, distillers who hate me, there's that too. But I love educating people. I love teaching people. And I think that's the where I get the greatest joy, and everything else is just to me is just filler. But the moment I'm in a room with someone and I get to teach and, you know, I see the light bulb moment, that's the greatest moment for me. So that's what it's like to be me. You're motivated by everyone who said no, and you just keep on going. You know, and I'm thankful that I have Kenny and Ryan as partners on Bourbon Pursuit, because they've been incredibly supportive. We've been great friends. And so I guess that's kind of a short answer to really what could be a long one. But thanks for that question, Jesse. If you'd like to be like Jesse Boggs, hit me up on what you would like to know in the next Above the Char. Until next week, cheers.
It's that time of the year where everybody started to make their vacation plans on visiting Kentucky, the mecca of bourbon. And if you are coming to Kentucky, you need to make sure you visit us at Pursuit Spirits in Louisville. We're right in the heart of Clifton, near Butchertown and Nulu, and only just a few miles away from downtown Louisville. But when you do come, you need to book your experience to go do our whole shebang. This is the one that's really the star of the show. You get a full-on tasting. You get to do your own personal barrel selection experience. And you get to grab a whiskey thief and fill your bottle directly from the barrel. We're doing something completely brand new that nobody else is doing here in bourbon country. Plus, you get a free sweet tasting glass at the end of it. I guarantee you, you're going to end up being one of the many people that's also leaving us a 5-star review. So make sure you come and check us out. You can book your reservation by going to pursuitspirits.com and clicking the Visit Us button.
It's that time again to get bourbon strong with Give270. Purchase your $50 tickets for your chance to win from our 50 bourbon prizes. Don't miss out on rare bottles and grand prizes like the legendary Pappy Set, a Weller Rainbow, and the Blood Oath Trilogy. Hurry, only 3,000 tickets are available. Single bottle winners go back in for the grand prize draw. Will you win the ultimate Pappy Set or one of our other incredible prizes? Get your tickets now at Give270.org. Charitable gaming license ORG 000273.
From their bar to yours, Chad and Sarah of the popular YouTube channel It's Bourbon Night bring you their favorite at-home old-fashioned mix with the new Elemental Elixirs Golden Hour Syrup. It's a custom-made syrup with notes of bold black tea, warm spices, and orange zest. All you need is your favorite whiskey and ice. No bitters needed. One bottle makes 16 drinks, so that's only $1 cocktail before you add your own whiskey. They can also be enjoyed in other cocktails or spirits, mocktails, coffee, tea, and anything you can think of. It's crafted locally in Lexington, Kentucky, and you can get your bottle now at whiskeyambitions.com. Welcome, everybody. We're back with another episode of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. Kenny, Ryan, and Fred here today. How's it going, fellas?
What up?
Hey, we're all here.
Three of us here.
I know.
It's rare.
And we get to have a very special guest on today. Somebody's coming back to the show. He was back on episode 194, but they've been coming out with a lot of big hitters lately. They had the Founders Collection. They've had a lot of strong competitors that have been in some of my favorite bourbons. I mean, heck, some of the Mizanora finishes have been amazing. And I can't wait to kind of dive into more of this and kind of talk about the growth that they've experienced since they had just only released like their 3 or 4 core expressions when we had them back on the show back in March of 2019.
Last time we were down at the distillery, we got to graciously, you know, see the whole facility and hang out with Cave. And he was one of my favorite guests because he's one of those guys that like just said, F it. I'm putting everything on the line. I'm taking on, you know, the traditional Kentucky guys. He was a true entrepreneur, and I loved hearing his story. I could see his heart, his passion for the industry, even though he was a quote unquote outsider. And then, you know, maybe a psychologist or whatever. I may have to hit you up after.
We all need some mental health right now.
But one of my favorite guests, and I'm glad to get to talk to him again because so much has changed since we were talking about March 2019. So a lot of there's new owners, there's new everything, you know, so I'm excited to hear all about it.
And I've hung out with Cave from Rabbit Hole many, many times and smoked many cigars and closed a few bars down with him and had some vintage whiskey. And he reminds me of like a cornerback in the NFL. Corners are the kind of like, that's the hardest position, in my opinion, to play in the NFL. And the way he manages his company, it reminds me of like a Deion Sanders who may get burned
he's
like
high
one
stepping.
Time, but then the rest of the time he's getting interceptions and like, you know, it's been hit after hit for Rabbit Hole. My favorite, the thing that they put out in the last few years has been their rye from a couple of years ago. That rye was so good, but I just
got a little sample of something that might be beating that in the rabbit hole pyramid of greatness, I guess. Yeah, it smells great. How you doing, Kaveh?
I'm doing great, guys, and thanks for having me here, and thanks for the kind words. It's so nice to be with you again after the pandemic and hang out and sip a little bourbon.
We can do that. We can do that. So you just heard him. He hears his voice. That's Kaveh Zamanian. He was back on episode 194. Do you still go by founder and whiskey maker at Rabbit Hole? Is that your title nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that's the everyday title, basically. My formal title is with my Pernod Partners, CEO of Rabbit Hole. But you know, I taste the bourbon every week. I'm part of every sensory panel when it comes to selection of what goes into the bottle. So I take the whiskey maker title more seriously.
Yeah, I like that too. I think we can all appreciate that. So the other thing that we had kind of talked about in the first episode where he interviewed you, you also have a PhD in psychology and you're a certified psychoanalyst, correct?
Correct.
So why don't you go by Dr. K?
Actually, you should have been Dr. Z, but you know, it's a great question. Sometimes people have called me by my title and I'm like, listen, those days are long gone. I'm a humble whiskey maker now and just like to be going by Kaveh. That's it.
It's much more rational, right?
Exactly.
Maybe. Yeah, I was about to say, I was like, you earned it though. I mean, in order to getting a PhD, like that takes a long time to be able to do something like that. So usually, I mean, there's a lot of dentists out there. They like to be called doctors, right?
Oh, good. Yeah. but now, I mean, The Hangover had a whole thing about that, and it was so accurate.
Yeah, no, never tell a dentist they're not a doctor.
If you're a dentist listening, we love you.
I'm just kidding. I got to razz him out there a little bit. So kind of give us a little bit of your background as well, because anybody that hasn't listened to 194, just kind of give them your little elevator pitch on how you really went down the rabbit hole, per se.
Yeah, you know, I cut my teeth in the hospitality business, putting myself through school, and fell in love with spirits. Met my wife, who's from Kentucky, now about almost 20 years ago, and we started coming down to Louisville in the early 2000s. And really, at that point, kind of my eyes opened up about what real Kentucky bourbon is. And eventually, we moved down here, and I got the bug to get in the bourbon business. That was really the beginning of it. And I think, for me, the main motivation was how do I contribute to the great lineup of bourbons that are out there and do something that's genuinely innovative. So our kind of proposition was to make one-of-a-kind whiskey expressions, and we add to the list of these amazing brands that have been coming out of the Commonwealth for the last 150 years.
So 2012 was when you started, and then 2018 was when you opened the distillery, correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And then, what was it, 2019 is when Pernod came in.
Yeah, so it was July of 2019 that we forged a partnership with Pernod. So now we're coming on close to 3 years, basically, with these guys.
And when we look at Pernod Ricard, you know, this is a company that had had Wild Turkey and sold it. They were also owners at one time of the Seagram's plant, now known as MGP, in Indiana. And so they kind of...
If they only hung on for like 10 more years.
Yeah. I mean, everything happens for a reason. They put their efforts into Irish whiskey, and I dare say that was definitely a good move, because Jameson is hot. Redbreast wins almost every spirits competition and enters for whiskey. And so they put a lot of focus on Irish whiskey, and I think they lifted the category immensely. And they've been trying to get back into the American whiskey game for a long time. And so you saw they acquired Smooth Ambler, a partnership with Kaveh. And so they have been very strategic about who they selected. And when they worked with you, I'm thinking they looked at that distillery and they see opportunity for expansion. It's beautiful. I mean, I look at Rabbit Hole as one of the most beautiful architectural designs ever. And by the way, folks,
it was one of the first modern ones too.
It was very modern. I stayed the night there to do a live stream.
I remember that.
Of 24 hours of fermentation.
I remember that.
And the fermenters and I are very close.
Yeah, special bond.
And like it is the first distillery that was truly created with the modern eye, in my opinion. Like there's not a place in there that cannot be turned into an Instagram moment for people who walk through.
Is that the original intent, Kaveh? We want everything to be selfie-worthy. Like,
well, listen, I like things pretty. I don't know what to tell you about that. But, you know, the other piece of it was, how do you create a space, a distillery, where basically the guests are in the soup? They can have a full sensory experience of the process. And that was the intent. So you got hospitality and manufacturing coming together in one space. And it is a marvel because, you know, we now produce 27,000 barrels a year out of that facility.
Wow.
So think about it. Given our footprint, I think per square feet, we actually pump out more liquid than any other distillery in the U.S. And it's a very efficient, tightly run operation. And I'm really proud of both the facility and the team. That's just absolutely incredible.
And it's in a great area. Like Nulu's one of the, well, that might be a bad thing for you all. It's one of the biggest, fastest growing parts of, you know, downtown Louisville, where everybody's coming. And is that a challenge, you know, with the growth of Nulu?
It is a challenge, and I can share with you guys a little bit more in terms of our plans, but we actually take a lot of pride in that because I certainly feel that Rabbit Hole became a second anchor after the Green Building, which was the first one. Rabbit Hole was the second real significant development in that neighborhood that has really elevated the neighborhood. So yeah, we're proud of that.
I'd agree with that. And to paint a picture, I mean, 10, 15 years ago, this is where a large portion of the homeless population lived. And this was also where, you know, there was just no focus on this part of the city, on either Main Street or Market Street from that side. And
now it's hot.
Gil, you know, developed it, and it hit. And, you know, they tried to do the same thing in Portland. It didn't work there.
Yep.
Portland, Louisville. And I would agree with you that Rabbit Hole was really, I think it was really the first anchor. I mean, the Green Building was nice from a story perspective, but this city is driven by bourbon and the food scene. And if you don't have a strong restaurant in an area, which they had one for a little bit called Moz, and then that closed. But if you don't have a strong restaurant in the area.
I forgot about Moz.
No. And if you don't have a strong distillery, then you don't have an area. And so I think you all built it. One of the things that fascinates me is it's an urban distillery that kind of operates like a traditional distillery, you know? And it's like, it's a workhorse facility.
It really is. I think, you know, between us and Angel's Envy down the street, you got a couple of really powerhouse distilleries operating in an urban setting, and it's pretty incredible. And we've been fortunate because I think the folks around us really appreciate what we're doing. The job creation alone has been significant. You know, we went from basically 2-3 of us sitting on top of a coffee shop, please and thank you, on Market Street. Now we have about 80 folks working at the distillery.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
I want to touch on that expansion a little bit. So when you had first started, I mean, everybody kind of starts off with contract distillation is kind of what you were doing, mm-hmm. kind of get that out the door. And then the distillery comes up in 2018. When you start distilling, start mashing, start aging, have you figured out that you've been able to take care of demand, or are you seeing demand just kind of like skyrocket and it's really kind of hard to keep up? And what are you doing at the distillery to try and help meet that demand?
Well, you know, that's probably, if I had to pat myself on the back, one of the best decisions I made was to design the distillery to produce the number of barrels that it can, right? So initially, it gave us an opportunity to do some contract distillation for other folks and bring that revenue back and put it in our own brand and be able to allow us to grow. And then the second piece is that as Rabbit Hole is growing, we're scaling back contract distillation and dedicating that liquid for our own products. And nowadays, as you guys know, with logistics and everything else, and the price of poker has gone up. So you want to build a distillery, time, money, that all adds up.
Yeah. Labor, materials, everything that goes into it. So you've seen, of course, demand sign of skyrocket as well. I think, as kind of mentioned earlier, you're also one of the most modern brands you see when it comes to the label, when it comes to the marketing, when it comes to advertising and stuff like that. Kind of talk about your focus on how, you know, that angle kind of takes it to it as well.
You know, for me, one of the things that's exciting about bourbon is bringing new folks to the fold. You know, there's still, if you think about it, sometimes I got to remind myself that we're in a little bit of a bourbon bubble in the sense that I interact with a lot of people that are connoisseurs, big fans, deep knowledge, you know, they geek out about the products. But when you go outside a certain, you know, circle, most people still are still in that discovery mode. And I think there's so much room for growth. And Rabbit Hole was in a way was positioned to do that, positioned to not necessarily go at odds with traditional heritage brands, but to complement those and draw some new consumers that are, you know, interested in a little bit different story, different aesthetics, and ultimately just all in all, a different position in the market.
Have you seen that narrative change a little bit as well? I think last time when we talked to you, we kind of talked about some of the, I don't want to say negative, but some of the more criticism things that had come out.
The hangups, like why should we go with a new brand, you know, like
yeah, Rabbit Hole? I mean, it's a lot of things of people just, you know, they look at it and they're like, oh, well, another four-year-old whiskey on the market, what do we do this? But the product has changed, the product has grown, you have a lot more aged product, you have different kind of collections now that definitely showcase a broader array of things that you are able to offer. Has that connotation or has that thought kind of faded away, or have you seen that kind of change with the modern whiskey consumer or most people that have kind of been in this now for a few years?
You know, I think for me, generally, consumers are much more forgiving that we give them credit. I think, you know, as long as the product is good, there's not as much hang up, or at least that I see across the board traveling the country and the reception that we're getting with our products. And I think there's also, as you guys know this better than I do, a lot of great new brands have come to market. A lot of these guys start with sourcing and blending model and they've put out some incredible products. And I think in a lot of ways have opened up a new vista with regards to consumers. And for me as a whiskey maker, that's what's really exciting because I want more and more people to discover bourbon and what it is. And not just in the States, but the international market, which is a whole nother territory. It's of white space and blue sky that I'm excited about.
Speaking of blue sky, I mean, you're advertised all over Louisville International Airport. I remember,
it's like, how many pillars do you have?
Yeah, it's like I walked through there. I was like, man, there's a rabbit hole everywhere around here.
Yeah, you know, I think part of the change in marketing and the mission has been, how do we go top of the funnel? How do we go wide and really showcase our brand to a wider audience and not just focus on the folks that are connoisseurs of American whiskey? And that's where the pillars come in and some of the other marketing efforts.
Yeah, somebody told me if you try to appease the whiskey geeks, you'll go bankrupt. And it's like, you got to appeal to the mass and, you know,
oh,
more broad consumer.
I'd imagine that's true. They're big with millennials, you know, and oh, yeah. the young crowd. And
we don't like our daddy's bourbon. And
I remember when, you know, we did something together and that like came out, I was like, I think this is the youngest consumer base for any bourbon brand. And I don't know if you've done the data on that, but like you just see who shows up when there's a Rabbit Hole event and they're 25-year-old out of college, you know, wanting to have a good time people.
Yeah, our core is between 25 to about 40, maybe a little bit more than 40, maybe 25 to 42, 43. And we have about 40, I think 2% women for Rabbit Hole, which is pretty amazing for a brand, you know.
I'm curious, how do you gather that data? I'm just kind of curious.
Well, that's one of the benefits of being with Pernod now. You get access to lots of great data, the databases that are out there that, you know, I didn't have access to when I first started because it costs so much money to be able to get the Nielsen's and all the other.
Now, is this where Pernod puts a chip in every bottle of Rabbit Hole?
It scans your fingerprint whenever you open it.
No, that is true. Those large companies, they have it, you know, dialed in. And, you know, they're very prominent on like digital. And so digital is pretty easy to track as well as like if you got partnerships with those large retailers, you get that point of sale material real quickly. Data is one of the big money makers in the world of retail.
Is going after the younger consumer kind of your angle? I mean, is that the way that you look at it and say, this is where we're going to carve our niche. This is how we can edge ourselves a little bit out in the market.
I wouldn't say that's my angle. I'll tell you what my angle is. My angle ultimately is to develop whiskey, make a brand that is lasting. And that's genuinely what my desire is. I'm looking down 20, 30 years from now, after I've retired, you guys are able to enjoy Rabbit Hole whiskey and you consider it to be one of the greatest brands out there. And that's our legacy. So what I'm positioning Rabbit Hole to be is to ultimately have a great product year after year on a consistent basis, more so than anything else. And if it happens to be 25-year-olds that enjoy it, great. If it happens to be 60-year-olds that enjoy it, that's great too.
I think you said like 42% mm-hmm. female. Why do you think that is with your all's brand? What do you think like your approach has like appealed to that market?
You know, I think part of it is that we've been inclusive and open from the get-go. You know, you guys have seen the artwork at the distillery as an example, you know, the shape and the form of the bottle, you know, everything that goes into it was really in some ways, from my standpoint, designed in a way to be open and inclusive. And I think it draws people in. You know, the bottle aesthetically, it's got a masculine kind of feel to it, but at the same time with the taper and the sash also has certain feminine elements. I think the distillery also, again, there's certain kind of masculine and feminine elements in there that's very implicit, but people respond to it and realize that at the end, our value is about inclusivity and bringing more people to the fold.
In writing Whiskey Women, one of the things that I learned and I've since like I've continued to study the subject, one of the things I have learned is that if you try to target a group, you will often fail. And like, I don't think you can be, you can be over the top with it. Like, so when you see like someone come out with pink, like some kind of pink bourbon or something, they're going to fail immensely because women will find that offensive. And I don't think there's really ever any one thing, but I know that it always comes down to whiskey, no matter what the genre is. And having picked the very first Rabbit Hole single barrel, I tasted so much of your whiskey that you distilled and that you contract distilled. And I just know that your bottle, your marketing could get them to buy one bottle.
That's right.
You know, it's the whiskey that gets them to buy the second bottle. And your whiskey has like a, you can taste like an oily, like an essence in there that is very appealing to people with palates. And so I think that's whatever your marketing people are saying, I think that's what's getting people to come back.
Yeah, I agree. Whiskey. I mean, I think about Cave Hill, right? Cave Hill, the recipe, it's a 4-grain recipe, but the honey malted wheat there, I think was in some ways an element to bring and develop a more approachable whiskey, basically. And I think you're absolutely right. It's the bottle and the marketing can only take you so far. It's got to be the liquid that bring you back.
Yeah, the liquid's so interesting because you get so much different flavors you're not used to with Kentucky bourbon. Like Kentucky bourbons, they're great, don't get me wrong, but sometimes your palate kind of gets like bored or fatigued, like with caramel, vanilla, you know, oak. It's like, okay, that's fine and all, but they're, you know, like with yours, you get the honey notes, the grain notes, the more interesting nuanced things that keep you coming back and like, well, he's got another expression I want to try. I want to do this and do that. And yeah, it's hats off to you guys for kind of pushing the boundaries of like what's a traditional Kentucky bourbon.
And that's the evolution of bourbon. And you still see it today. You'll see people who will completely dismiss Rabbit Hole or Smooth Ambler or someone who's, you know, not part of that traditional bourbon scene. They'll completely dismiss it because it's not, quote, flavor profile of Blanton's or E.H. Taylor, something like that. And that genre of consumer is becoming the minority because people are experimenting and finding new flavors that they like because of what distillers like Cave are doing, introducing new grains. I mean, he's probably got 42 different malts in an experiment right now. you know, I mean, he's like, this guy's like, he's probably malting barrels like somehow. He loves the malting process. So I think that Rabbit Hole is the story of the evolution of what bourbon consumers want from a taste perspective.
Yeah, and it has to be encouraging that your demographic is like 25 to 42. Like, wow, you got them at a young age. You know, they got 40.
That's generations.
You know, they got 40, you know, 40 years of drinking.
It is definitely generational. And we talk about, I think the future of bourbon is, it's just so exciting because there's so many great distillers doing exactly what Fred is talking about, experimenting with different things. And that range of expression is expanding. And that's where we look down the road 10, 20 years from now. And there's going to be some amazing new expressions out there that are not just, you know, the old standards that you guys all know.
Yeah. The old recipe of like, we'll do one recipe, age it in 10 different places, and call it 20 different brands.
Right. We're itching to get the expression Cavehill Boxer High Gold 10, 12-year-old and see where they are at that point.
And one thing that I found fascinating about all of your expressions is that there's not a market confusion. A lot of times when a new brand comes out with expressions, people will mix them up. There's absolute separation between them. I found that fascinating. I've never seen that before.
Well, you know, the thinking for me was, how did the beer guys, how did the wine guys do it, right? I think that's been a challenge, and I think it's getting slowly better. But from distributors to retailers, the question that they ask, well, what's the difference between this one and that one? And what we talk about is, listen, you got to look at this in a way similar to wine, where I imagine a day where people are going to come in and ask and know the difference between a four grain, high rye, wheated, and all the different nuances, even including wood finishes. You know, we're seeing a whole range of wood finishes as well. So, you know, be it recipe-based or finished-based, blending, finishing, consumers are going to get more educated. And ultimately, the challenge is with our business is, how do you differentiate it in terms of a name? If, you know, we don't have Cab, Pinot to clearly separate it, we need to rely on secondary names or the recipes or the finishes to help people cue it up. But, you know, that's where I think the direction of American whiskey is going. And not to even mention American single malt, because that's a whole nother category that I think is exciting and emerging.
Well, I think another question that Fred kind of brought up was your obsession with malt, because if you have a lot of things going on, I kind of want to dive in just to what's your fascination with, because what Cavehill uses both a malted barley and a malted wheat, correct? So kind of talk about why you wanted to go with more of a malted approach on some of these grains. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. And with Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. And you can get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bourbon, all lowercase, and go to shopify.com/bourbon to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/bourbon. I think another question that Fred kind of brought up was your obsession with malt, because if you have a lot of things going on, I kind of want to dive in just to what's your fascination with, because what Cavehill uses both a malted barley and a malted wheat, correct? So kind of talk about why you wanted to go with more of a malted approach on some of these grains.
Well, listen, one of the reasons that I got excited 10 years ago, 12 years ago, was that within the parameters of what constitutes bourbon, so you got 51% corn, you know, new oak barrels and so on and so forth.
But can it be malted corn?
Everybody looks afraid. I've actually seen malted corn before. MB Roland had like a little experiment where it was malt. It was wicked. Yeah. It was weird.
Just had to.
It was like growing like little legs. It was weird.
But you got 51% corn, 49% magic. That's the way I see it, because you got so much room for experimentation. And to me, you know, malted grains, it's like having different, you got a whole spice rack. You got all these different ingredients to play with, different flavors to bring. So there's the culinary reference for me that's really exciting. And I think that's one of the ways bourbon is different from Scotch or Irish whiskey, where we got a lot of room for creativity. And that's what's exciting.
You need to make a t-shirt that says 51% corn, 49% magic.
It's in the works.
Yeah. It's under works.
So one of the malts that he's like really becoming famous for is the chocolate malt.
Yeah.
Take us through the discovery process of chocolate malt, because I first tasted that in Irish whiskey and saw it used in Europe quite a bit. but no one really played with it in the United States. So where'd that love come from?
Well, you know, it wasn't specific to chocolate per se, but in any given month, we're tasting probably about a dozen or more different malted grain samples from different maltsters. And it just happened that this goes back to those early years because I laid those barrels down during contract distillation. And I was actually talking about this, that part of the inspiration came in from Derek Bell, reading his book.
Oh, yeah.
And looking at those great recipes. I think Derek was probably one of the first guys, at least from my reference, that really started using different types of grain configurations. And for me, that was the beginning of that light bulb moment. And it drew me to take a look at different malting facilities and what are they doing to be able to bring different flavors to the forefront. And it just happens that, you know, we were playing around with sweeter notes and how can we bring some dark chocolate notes, and that's the direction it went.
Forgive my ignorance. Who is Derek
Bell? He's the owner, distiller of Corsair.
Oh, yep. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And he was early on, like he was a god in the craft space, and he came out with Triple Smoke, hit a home run. But he kept doing all these experiments, and I was always like, you have the home run, focus on that, and then taper off with some experience from there, here to here. But they also own an enormous construction business in Nashville, which, you know, Nashville's always under construction. So it's
a recurring revenue.
Yeah, so he's like, you know, he's split a little bit, but they still have their operation in Tennessee.
Very cool. So with experimentation and malting and this and that, like, can you tell from the malting process, like now, like this is something I think will work good in a distillate, or do you have to go through the whole process and making a batch, doing it, you know, distilling it, tasting the final product to be like, okay, now this is something we can move forward with?
There's always a level of experimentation and not knowing exactly how it's going to land. But I talk to the maltsters, but what it really comes down to is the taste of the actual grain. So okay. I get samples on a regular basis, literally like, you're eating a cereal. You basically taste it. And we have a panel. We sit around and chat about it, but, you know, what configuration would be best. And then we put it to test. That's basically it. And we usually start with one batch. And for us, one batch ends up being about 25 barrels, 24, 25 barrels. It's a significant investment, but at the same time, you know, so far everything's been pretty good. And it just really starts with trying to get a sense directionally what the ingredients are going to come together and what kind of flavor they're going to have, and let that guide us.
With all the different, you know, offerings and recipes and this and that, blending has to be like on your, you know, radar. And I think that's what's going to be like the future of American whiskey too, is like what Scotch has kind of hung their hat on is blending. How are you guys going to be approaching that moving forward?
Yeah, well, I think that might be a good segue to our 10-year anniversary blend.
Let's talk about it.
Yes, which is, it's fantastic. I've been sipping on it here late. It might be my favorite. I know we got a 16-year-old here, but this 10-year-old's really good.
Yeah, so, you know, I set up Rabbit Hole about 10 years ago, and we started talking about doing something special for this year, celebrating it. And what we decided to do is to see if we can look at our existing stock and come up with a blend and a finishing touch that would make it special. So this is actually a blend of High Gold and Cave Hill that we aged in for a secondary double char, if you would, in new toasted and charred barrels. And I'm really excited about it. So this is really our first foray in that kind of a blending world. I mean, obviously we're blending on a day-to-day basis,
sure,
putting the barrels together, but a unique product that's just based on a blend of other recipes. This is our first one.
Well, congratulations on a decade, first off.
And yes.
Cheers to that. I think that's
absolutely
big milestone to be able to hit there. And one of the things that, is this going to be part of a founder's collection? Is this going to be just kind of your own separate release? I kind of want to dive into
founders. So this is going to come in a really nice, special, if you would, crystal package this year for us. And it's only going to be 1,000 bottles. But I am so excited about the liquid that's probably going to become more of a regular thing, I hope. Maybe not in such a fancy package, but maybe under the Founders collection, yeah.
It's got those nice, like, honey, just toasted marshmallow, just really decadent sweet. It's very good. What was it about those two products you thought this would be, you know, a great blend together?
Well, you know, started fooling around with it, tinkering at home. I mean, it's not an unusual thing for me to just,
Tuesday.
You know, yep. Do a little blend of High Gold and Cavill or with Boxer Grill and just goof around like we've all done it. And that was the beginning of it. And then we're thinking, okay, look, how do we even make it a little bit more special? So played out with a new barrel. And this is, to me, it's just caramel bomb.
Yeah, yeah. It's a Werther's.
It's
like
caramel and vanilla.
Yeah, it's definitely good. Go ahead, Fred.
I was going to say, I went straight to the 16-year.
Fred just joke. Went straight for age. He's a label chaser.
I love French oak, but is the 16-year-old something that's coming out this year too?
Yeah, so that one actually is coming out this spring. So hope it was supposed to come out in May, but we got some bottle issues. So
right, everyone's got that.
It's gonna come
hop in line, get a ticket, hop in line.
Yeah, I think it's going to come out sometime
in June. Talk to our therapist about that.
It's part of our founder's collection, and we call it Nivalier, which is based on the two, it's kind of a play on the two forests that the wood was procured from, and it's a combination of, that's another blend, basically, over the years I'd collected some barrels that we ended up not using. It's sourced liquid that I'd bought over the course of the last several years. We blend it. It's a combination of various high rye barrels from different distilleries. And then we aged it in the French oak for a little bit over a year.
Is it different states or is it all Kentucky?
All Kentucky. Yeah, it's all Kentucky.
It's an interesting project right there.
I know. But you come to your lab.
It's unique. It's very unique.
Yeah. But the other project I want to talk about is kind of your collection, right? The Founders Collection. What was the impetus in kind of like starting that one? And kind of growing that, is it because you've got all these great barrels or experiments? Like what's the idea of the Founders Collection and what does it really mean to you?
So Founders is definitely an area where it's a combination of new recipes, like the 5-grain Race King that we did.
Yeah, because this was not around when we first interviewed
that's
you.
That's right, that's right. And then also it's the cask strength expression. So all the Founders always is going to be cask strength. It's a higher proof, obviously. So it's a combination of either new recipes that we have not introduced at all or older expressions of what we have. And either at this point, obviously, it's sourced, but the vision for Founders is that Cavehill at 10, High Gold at 10, 12 will be part of the Founders Collection.
Yeah, would make sense. I mean, I think that you've also done some good experimentation with it. You had some Mizanara finishes, you had some other things in there. Kind of talk about the idea, is it just going to be an age statement or is it going to be, let's go ahead and experiment with these more. Let's figure out like what's the next boundary, what can we push this with?
Yeah, so there's another series called Distillery Series. So really where you break it down, Rabbit Hole is going to have our core products, Founders, and the Distillery Series. Founders is that combination of older products, new recipes. The Distillery Series, we started with the Starlino release just recently. Those are primarily basically liquid that we finished in different barrels. So smaller, only released at the distillery and some retail shops here in Kentucky. So we tease it out a little bit where the wood finishes go under the Distillery Series and the recipe-based stuff and the older expressions generally, or the real funky blends, if you would go under Founders Collection.
I got a question though. How did you get hooked up with Starlino? Only because I feel like it is one of the best vermouths I've ever had. And I'm not just saying.
We're a huge Starlino fan.
I was like, I'm not getting paid to say that either. I mean, they're a really, really good vermouth. I mean, the rye with the Starlino is fantastic too.
I know. I don't even need to add Starlino. I feel like I'm in a Manhattan right now.
I know.
No, perfect. I know. Just exactly. Just add a little cherry to it and put it on ice and you're good to go.
Yeah.
But I met Mark Teasdale and Elwin Gladstone, who are founders of actually Starlino, but before that, Malfi Gin and a bunch of other brands when we merged with Pernod about 2.5 years ago. I was in France, met Mark and Elwin there. We hit it off, forged a friendship, and we've talked about collaboration, and this is really the first collaboration that we've engaged in, and really proud of it.
Gotcha. I mean, school me on a little bit. I thought it was just like a hotel in Italy is kind of what Starlino is, right?
Yeah, it is. Although, you know, what they did is that they partnered with a distillery in Italy that produces the vermouth. So they basically, you know, came up with the idea. Starlino is the branding reference, if you would. And, you know, Mark and Elwin kind of were the, I guess, the visionaries behind it. And here's what it is.
Yeah. Aged in bourbon barrels. I think anybody can get behind that one, right?
Yeah.
And then coming back and then putting rye in their barrels, right? So it's perfect harmony.
It's the circle of life.
They have, I think it's like three different vermouth, and one of them is the one that's the Starlino Rosso is the one that's finished in bourbon barrels.
Yeah. Mm. No, it's good.
It's great.
I mean, it's a fantastic product. So as you've been growing this category and you've been kind of growing your brand and kind of seeing where it's going, you know, I think even last time we were on the show, we asked you like, what's the next few years ahead of you? What's going to happen? Where do you kind of see everything going on now that you're part of the Pernod family? You have a great location that people can come and visit. I see that the tides are shifting. People that might have written you off a few years ago because there was just a source or young product, now that you have older distillate that's now going to the bottle, things are starting to change. Like, where do you kind of see the horizon for you? Like, what's the next phase for Cava and Rabbit Hole here?
We want to get a stronger foothold in the U.S. market. We want more people to discover Rabbit Hole. I think that's, you know, top of mind for me. We just opened up the international market. So we're in UK now, Canada. We just made our first shipment to South Korea. So Asia, Europe are opening up. That's basically my you know, next chapter, if you would. How do we spread the gospel of Rabbit Hole and widen
how do we
the
take
fold?
Over the globe? Yeah,
exactly.
Do you find some barriers to entry to explain to people? Because, you know, in Kentucky, especially Louisville, I mean, you're becoming a household brand and the geek world knows about you, but do you find that there's challenges there, you know, getting the message across?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, right now there's so many brands out there, and you guys, again, know this better than I do, so many new brands emerging. I think it's a little bit of a cluster for consumers because it's overwhelming. There's just way too many bottles on the shelf, and how do you separate and tease out? So, you know, for us, the challenge is to get out there and talk about it, make sure there's lips to liquid and engage the consumer. That's what really the challenge is. And again, this is where a partnership like Pernod really helps out, because it allows us to be able to go out there and have a wider reach and a broader engagement. But it is a challenge, no question about it.
Second t-shirt idea. By the way, lips to liquid.
Anybody lips, catch? I like that, lips to liquid.
Oh, man, that's been an industry phrase for
for a while.
Has it really? Oh, okay, yeah. Well, you know.
We're, gosh, I remember.
We're just the little peons in this thing. We're still learning.
Well, it goes back to the events, you know, like the Whiskey Fest and Whiskeys of the World and stuff. And that someone at some point said, this is how you get, you know, lips to liquid to consumers. And that was, I don't remember who phrased that, but it's been around forever.
What is, as a brand, so like, what's better, going out into stores or going to hitting up bartenders? Like, what's the best way to allocate your resources? Or what is Pernod? I'm trying to steal Pernod's secrets for this.
No. I mean, I think it's a great question. And if you would have talked to me 10, 11 years ago, if I knew what I know now, I probably would have had second thoughts about jumping in the game, because the cost of going to market is enormous. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think that's one of the biggest challenges. Yeah. There's two things that I would say to kind of folks that are getting started. One is the challenge of scaling your business. So it's one thing to sell maybe a handful of barrels or handful of cases. It's another thing to scale it up. Both having the quality of the liquid and the reach to do it, that's a challenge. I think the other piece is the marketing element that you're talking about. On-premise restaurant and bar promotion, getting bartenders and chefs and all those guys, that's a lot of work and very, very costly. You know, for us, actually, for better or worse, part of what gave us a little bit of an advantage and it actually helped us during the pandemic was the fact that we had a pretty nice presence in off-premise in liquor stores, both independent and bigger chains, that allowed us to, in some ways, go wider and get a greater recognition. And even though we started working with bartending community folks to be able to get that going, that was a slower slog for us because it just, again, it takes a lot of people, it takes a lot of money, and then the pandemic hit, and that was that. And now we're trying to get back into it.
And also, look, I mean, we're talking, this has been all about business, but Cave is also like a dusty hunter. He's a big collector of...
tell me more. Let's hear more.
Of dusty. So, yeah, let's jump into that for a second.
Sure.
Let's talk about how's the dusty collection looking, and what's been your favorite find lately?
Listen, after what I saw with the Sotheby's auction the other day, I was like, I don't know, man. This is getting to be an expensive hobby. But you know, those prices are outrageous.
Maybe time to sell.
Exactly.
But I'll say, Michter's overtook Pappy in that one. The Four Roses bottles didn't do as well as I thought they would. Mm-hmm. And then the Linnell bottles, 45K a piece. Yep.
Red Hook?
Yeah. I kind of figured those would do well, but
still insane.
That's still a lot.
Yeah. Anyway, no, back amazing. To Dusty's. Yeah.
Well, that's it. I mean, I think honestly, related to that, I haven't actually been buying a whole lot because the prices are through the roof.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just a challenge. So, you know, what I'm interested in is if I can find some pre-prohibition bottles. Mm-hmm. That's really what's exciting to me. And that's becoming harder and harder to find. So, my price position right now, it's like I got a lot of old fits from the 50s that I love. I got a couple of cases of those that's been amazing, and I pull one of them out on occasion, actually, when friends come over. But I haven't really bought anything lately.
Is there any dusty bottles you're like, we got to recreate this or try to like recreate this?
That's a good question.
There is, and that's part of my...
That's Founders Collection 2021. Whatever 20, year we're in.
Maybe 2030?
2030, yeah.
Yeah. That's the malting secrets.
Yeah.
That's an announcement to come.
Yeah. I love that.
Fair enough.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, I guess what got you into the dusty side? I mean, I think that the bourbon bug bites us and you get into it and you have a friend that might introduce you to a dusty, but talk about your dusty journey. Like, what got you into doing that?
Well, that's the connection with psychology. You know, for me, you got to know your history, right? And that's what it is. You're basically tasting history in a bottle. And gives you a nice reference what people were doing, whenever it was pre-prohibition or post-prohibition. And that was really the initial kind of excitement about it. And other than that, I'm a little OCD. And when you're married 18 years, you got to have some kind of a perversion. And that's my perversion.
And I'll add to like, getting to know you, Kaveh, that was one of the things that made me really like you because it was not a...
It's not a money grab, right?
Yeah, exactly. What I was about to say. It's not a money grab. You were like, you know, passionate about the hobby and you leveraged everything to start the brand and brought in people you probably wouldn't normally talk to become investors and you built something, but you also still are drinking whiskey at home that's not yours and collecting it and all that. So that always made you kind of a little bit one of us. As a bourbon geek, as a passionate person about the category.
Well, I really, Fred, really, really appreciate that. I'm actually, seriously, I'm getting a little tingles here because, you know, right now, as you know, I'm an immigrant. And I think coming from the outside is a little bit, it's not just outside of the whiskey category, but also coming here to my new adopted home and to be able to be part of bourbon and contribute to what I think is actually more American than baseball or apple pie is a dream come true. And I think that's what ultimately for me is important. It's the legacy of leaving something. Obviously, making money is important. We all need to make money, but that far outweighs the business side of it. And it's, I got to pinch myself to be, wake up every morning feeling blessed and feeling great that I'm a part of it.
Yeah, you're one of the people that will be stamped in history forever. It's like we were at the Fraser Museum a couple weeks ago, and they have a video playing of just everybody who's made bourbon is what today. And it's like, I know you'll be on there too, you know, when it's, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, whenever we look back on history, and you're going to be one of those brands that you've stamped your part and you should be super proud of that.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, very cool. And I think that's probably a great way to end it. I mean, that definitely hits you in the feels a little bit right there. I think it's a great way to just kind of summarize everything. And thank you for joining us on the show to be able to share just a little bit more about, you know, your insights, your history, your business acumen, just everything that kind of goes into making this brand what it is today. And I think that it does start to show through. I mean, gosh, this 10-year, or should I say 10-year anniversary is amazing. Right. I love the blend. The 16 year is great. I love the Starlino. I mean, it's just home run after home run after home run right here.
Thank you, guys. It's just such a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, next time we won't wait 3 years to have you on again.
That would be great. Let's do it more often.
See you next week.
But with that, make sure if people want to follow you, I know you're big on social media too. So how do they get in touch with Kaveh here?
Yeah, I'm on social media. KZ Rabbit Hole is my handle. And then, of course, Rabbit Hole website and rabbit hole social media as well.
All right. Well, Dr. Z, thank you so much for coming on the show
today. Look at that. Dropping the Dr. Z.
we're gonna try to make it happen. Maybe just be an inside circle thing, whatever it is. But
but make sure he's like, yeah. Real inside.
Just this table.
Yeah. But make sure you follow Kaveh. Make sure you follow Rabbit Hole. And make sure you follow Bourbon Pursuit, wherever you get your socials. But with that, cheers, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Cheers.
Toodles.